Welcome to Real Money Radio, the show that focuses on real people, real problems, and real solutions. Here's your host, certified financial planner, David Holland.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Quickly becoming one of my favorite and top returning guests, David Widener, MarketWatch columnist, the writing on the wall. That's who he is. That's what he does. Very excited to have David on. He's been a newspaper reporter since 1988. Wow, that's a good run. Wall Street Journal 2003 continues today, writing MarketWatch columnist. He's won multiple awards, including two from the Associated Press for column writing and investigative reporting. We'll touch on some of that investigative reporting in just a minute. Regular contributor to Fox Business Network and a BA from the University of Kansas in English Language and Literature. That's probably important stuff to do if you're going to write as often as David does. David, welcome back to the program.
Hey, Dave. Thanks for having me.
I'm always excited to have you on because, you've got your nose right down in the middle of it on the street.
And it's not pretty down there, let me tell you.
It's not pretty. You have to turn that nose up a little bit. Well, listen, I got to dive right in, and I love having you on because you keep me in the know. There's so much to keep track of and so much to know, and people ask me sometimes when I'm doing advice and planning for them, they say, well, how do you keep track of all this? And, well, David, you're one of the ways I keep up with what's happening. And David's written a couple of very interesting articles here that have been on MarketWatch. Of course, you can go over and check out all of David's great work, MarketWatch.com. Keep it on your favorite list like I do and go in and find out what's happening. And I actually was sharing with David before we started, but I reposted one of your recent articles and a lot of people comment on it, and I wanted to get to it. And that's why you shouldn't trust Wall Street's ratings. So what ratings are you talking about, and why can't we trust them, David?
Well, I'm talking, the ratings agencies like Standard & Poor's and Moody's and Fitch, those are the big three. They rate just about everything. They rate everything from government securities to securities created by Wall Street firms, you know, with credit cards and mortgages and just about anything else an investor might take a look at. And we may not look at these things, but our fund managers are looking at them. They have requirements about what they can own, and ratings are a big part of that. They have to own so much AAA, so much AA, et cetera, et cetera. And so these things are a very, very essential or critical part of the financial world. I mean, and they're basically the rotten tomatoes of Wall Street, to borrow a movie metaphor. And as we all know, during the financial crisis, these ratings failed us, and specifically in the mortgage security arena, where this stuff was, were mm-hmm. stuff that was, where these mortgage securities, where the underlying mortgages were already failing, were getting AAA.
Right, just because they became as a package didn't make them good.
That's right. So in the aftermath, of course, when we were looking at the whole system and talking about revamping it, ratings, of course, were on the table, why did these ratings get so screwed up? Why are they so unreliable? And there were a lot of reasons, and part of it was structural, in that it's the issuer who pays for them, and part of it was conflicts of interest, which stems from that structural issue.
Sure.
And basically what happened was an issuer pays for it, but they can shop around. And this puts pressure on a ratings agency to win business. And to win business, what are you going to do? Well, you might give a little bit better of a rating to a certain security if you feel like you can get more business from that. And that's basically what happened. So the people who were involved in all this basically came out and said it was a pay-to-play structure.
Yeah.
It was, and so there were a lot of ideas kicked around. There were a lot, you know, maybe we should have investors who actually use the ratings, maybe they should pay for the ratings. And so there were all these structural ideas kicked around, and in the end, basically what happened was, as part of the Dodd-Frank Act, the SEC would simply go in and take a closer look at how business is being done.
And how's that working out?
Well, even by the SEC's own admission, these firms are still fundamentally flawed. There's an annual report that's created by the SEC in which they say how their reviews are going, and they're finding the same kind of mistakes.
Yeah.
Being made. There was one part of the report. They don't name names in these reports, in these annual reports, which is a shame.
Yeah.
But they said, you know, there were employees of a non-ratings firm participating in the ratings process. I mean, this stuff harkens back to some of the most egregious behavior we saw during the financial crisis, where hedge fund managers were going in and actually picking the securities because they wanted to bet against them.
How about that?
So if you're an investor and you're relying simply on these ratings that are issued by Moody's, Standard & Poor's, and Fitch, I think that you're really doing yourself a disservice. You have to do your own due diligence. You cannot count on these things. They may be a ballpark. Look, I don't want to suggest that the rating system hasn't improved somewhat, but there are still serious holes, and the SEC is there's no way that they can go in and regulate every ratings designation that is put out by these ratings firms on every security.
So right.
I think that investors have to really look at. If that's one lesson they're going to learn from the financial crisis, it is not to rely on these ratings as gospel.
Yeah, you can't. There's got to be some of your own independent due diligence or somebody else doing it. That there's a little bit of an inherent conflict, it sounds like, and it may be that it's the best system we have in place for now, but it's certainly not without its limitations and some of that conflict that may exist.
Yeah, and just as a bigger picture. Analysis that we had a window of opportunity following the financial crisis to remake all this stuff. And some stuff we did well, but some stuff we did not really get to the heart of the problem. And we have these lingering issues, the ratings agencies, the mortgage giants, and Dodd-Frank, which is basically micromanaging Wall Street. I mean, it's the 900 pages of law that called for other laws and great intentions, some good stuff in there, but a lot of it is you can't micromanage Wall Street. It changes too fast, as you know, Dave, and we're seeing the fallout from that.
Fair enough. Well, I tell you what, David, we're going to have to always remain vigilant about depending on some of these things because they can get us in trouble. And I want to grab a break. We come back though, David. I'd like to get your thoughts. You wrote another opinion piece for Market Watch on the 10th of February. You mentioned earlier hedge funds. And maybe they're good, but maybe they're not all the rage. And David's comment is why the smart money is running from hedge funds. We'll get to that right after the break. Stay right there.
When it comes to finding an advisor you can trust, are you unsure of the questions to ask? David Holland has written a book that can help, and it's called How to Get Great Advice and Avoid Scams. David has crammed his experience and insider knowledge about advisors and how they operate into this popular book. Visit Amazon.com to order your copy today. Or if you'd like to meet one-on-one with David to discuss your financial goals and concerns, he'll give you a free copy of his book when you meet. There's no cost or obligation. The number to call for your appointment with David is 671-PLAN or visit planstronger.com.
And we're back. David Widener on the line with us and Wall Street Journal Market Watch, marketwatch.com. And I teed it up nice and fat for you there right before the break, David. I want to get to your thoughts about smart money running from hedge funds, as you wrote about for MarketWatch back on February 10th. So these were all the rage for the longest period of time, or at least everybody's like, hey, I'm investing in a hedge fund. I'm really, on my game. And And maybe not so much now that these are people are kind of taking a second look.
Yeah, I think hedge fund, you know, the bottom line for what's happening in the hedge funds right now is that the performance just doesn't merit investor interest. It's just you're dealing with return that can't even keep up with the broad equity indexes.
Mm.
And I mean, you have an outlier here or there.
Sure.
I mean, you have some that are beating, and you have some. But you know, one of the funniest lines I saw on this, which I quote in the piece, was "It's getting so bad, hedge funds are starting to draw comparisons to mutual funds."
That is bad. That is bad.
Kind of a double slam there, and I think that's very accurate. I think that's why you're seeing, especially some of these big pension funds pulling back. The biggest, of course, was CalPERS, the big California retirement system. Last year, they made a lot of headlines when they said they're going to take their $4 billion that they had in hedge funds out. But there's a lot of reconsidering, I think, going on in that world about how much, you know, are they really worth it? You know, so many of these hedge funds, investing in a hedge fund is not, of course, like investing in a mutual fund. I mean, you have lockups. You have all these requirements and contracts you have to sign. And, of course, you have 2 and 20, which is 2% of assets every year and 20% of returns that are paid to the managers, not to you. And that's a pretty expensive proposition for a fund that is lagging. Major indexes when you could just invest in an index fund and get the same return. So I think that, you know, performance is the main issue, but I would also say the landscape for hedge funds has changed so much. I was always skeptical of hedge funds, and I think anybody with a critical eye would be when you saw a manager saying, oh, I've got 20% returns every year, up market, down market, whatever. And then it turns out that manager, Steve Cohen's firm, is a good example, was basically trading on inside information. Mr. Cohen himself was never indicted in that. I want to make that clear. But, you know, dozens of people at his firm ended up pleading guilty. And you have Raj Rajaratnam of Galleon Group, who also had those in. And they're across the board. I mean, there's this huge sweeping insider trading probe, and most of it is targeting hedge funds. And you know, anytime you see those kinds of gains, those Bernie Madoff gains, as, you know, I describe them, you have to be skeptical. I mean, nobody is that good. And even some of the stars, you know, the guys, Steve Eisman was a big name. John Paulson was another one. He made a ton of money betting against mortgages. Well, you know what he's betting on recently? Gold and energy.
And
he is getting absolutely hammered.
I'm sure.
So yesterday's darling is the next day's fool. And, you know, I think investors have kind of, you know, when hedge funds were sort of having their day in the sun in the last decade, it was a different environment where you didn't have high-speed trading and algorithmic trading, and everybody was just, the landscape has just changed so much, and the charlatans have been exposed. And the reality is that The old, it's hard to beat the market. It's really, really hard. And yes, there are people who do it, but I think, you know, we've seen last year more hedge funds close than it closed since the financial crisis. And I think a lot of that is about investors are getting wise. They're getting wise to these, that hedge funds aren't all they're cracked up to be.
Well,
that's my long-winded answer.
No, I think it's a good point, and I think, you know, if it takes a little time to wind it out, we will, but that's good, David. And I would add to, I think that in part of that investor wisdom, or maybe the financial world or the investment world growing up, is that there is a reality of, you know, it's, as you said, difficult to beat the market, and a lot more emphasis being placed, as it should be, on asset allocation and diversification and getting the appropriate mix and on risk and not just, can we beat the market, yes or no? I mean, if the market, if we got an up market, for 2014 was a great example with the S&P up, 13 or so percent, a properly diversified portfolio during that period of time most of them would have had a very difficult time of beating that.
Yeah, and I would just add that this is particularly important because a lot of investors who don't have big institutional money now have opportunities to get in hedge funds. It used to be that there was a pretty big hurdle to get into a hedge fund. You had to have, you know, $1 million or whatever this or that. And the SEC has changed the rules. I mean, yes, funds are regulated a little bit more, but on the other hand, they're also allowed to market downstream towards investors who may not have the kind of capital, the so-called wealthy investor who may not have been able to get into a hedge fund before, now can, and through different vehicles or to invest in them directly. And to me, that's always a signal. You know, there's always this, the game is over. The old Wall Street adage is that, you know, the game is over when they go after the dumb money.
Yeah.
And of course, that's the people at the bottom, the regular folks like you and me. Well, maybe me, not you, Dave. But, you know, that's always a red flag to me.
Right.
And I think that's very much the case with hedge funds, is that they're going after a broader pool of investors, not because they're out of the goodness of their heart,
right?
But they need capital. They
exactly.
need the money. And, you know, this is an industry that's going through a lot of change right now, and I think we're going to see more shakeout.
The bloom is off the rose, as they say.
Absolutely.
Dave Widener, ladies and gentlemen, MarketWatch columnist for just forever, and we're glad to have him on the program, MarketWatch.com. Speaking of the well-to-do, we'll come back and talk about another topic, and this is hot off the presses. This is from February 24th that David wrote about, the tax break for the rich you should be outraged about. Stay right there.
Since 1997, David Holland has built a solid reputation in our local community as an independent financial advisor. Just as important, Holland Financial's professional team has grown to include 3 experienced certified financial planners, a tax accountant, an attorney, 3 chartered financial consultants, accredited asset management specialist, and certified annuity specialist. Our attentive and professional staff gives prompt and accurate service to our 300-plus clients. If you're looking for financial advice you can count on today and for many years to come, call Holland Financial at 671-PLAN or visit us online at planstronger.com. Do you have financial questions you'd like answered on this show? Send them to questions@planstronger.com. You will remain anonymous.
And we're back with David Widener, MarketWatch columnist, MarketWatch.com. And I gotta get to this, David. I'm glad we do. We have a few minutes to get to this. Your opinion piece, this tax break for the rich should outrage you, February 24th. And I know you're going to be passionate about this one.
What I wrote about was HSBC.
Yeah.
And if your listeners have heard the headlines about HSBC, they're in trouble. They're in trouble because there's some evidence, there were some leaks from some source to the media that the bank had basically been helping clients put money into Swiss bank accounts. And these weren't regular clients. These were basically people who the U.S. government says it's illegal to do business with. These people on sanctions lists.
The do not call list.
Dictators. terrorists and drug dealers. I mean, HSBC has a history. This is not the first time that they've been accused of doing business with the wrong kinds of people. They had a money laundering case, which they basically admitted to.
They had to pay a pretty big fine, right?
Well.
When I say relatively no, but
if, for instance, if I had done business with a drug dealer or, you know, I don't think I'd be sitting here today. But they had to pay 10% of their profit, about $1 billion annual profit, and it's this inequity in punishment that really riles me because.
Yeah.
The problem with HSBC is that in most banks that get accused of something like this is that they always blame internal controls, as if it's some sort of systematic failure where
it's not people,
you know, their computer
accidentally
laundered money for Pablo Escobar or something.
Right. HAL 9000.
The reality is that, you know, there are real people making real decisions here. And we don't see anybody held accountable the way that you or I would be held accountable if we were doing tax evasion or, you know, handling drug money. And that's what really bothers me about this. And the failure of regulators to even act on this information, which they were given this information regarding the tax evasion years ago. And now some senators are calling on regulators. They're probably going to have a hearing, and why wasn't anything done? I mean, it is just outrageous. It's outrageous to think that, you know, regular people are held to such high scrutiny. I gave the example of my own tax audit where the IRS guy came to my apartment and measured my home office. And these banks are basically making millions of dollars in profit, doing business with people who are true criminals, and it's shareholders who pay the price. It's shareholders who end up suffering because of these fines and penalties against the banks. And I'll just make one more point. The CEO of HSBC, who's been there for a while, his name is Stuart Gulliver, has his own Swiss bank account. And
that's rich.
And he said, well, he didn't want his colleagues to know the size of his bonus, which to me is simply just outrageous. It's icing on the cake when you talk about the width or the
arrogance
or the moral compass of the people who are running these institutions. And it should be outrageous. It should be outrageous to anybody who pays taxes and is a law-abiding citizen.
Yeah. Well, the thing that strikes me, and I have a CPA background, David, so I know what you're talking about with the internal controls, and it's like they want to blame it all on some, you know, like HAL 9000, it's some haywire intellectual computer thing that did this, and it wasn't people. And, you know, until you have real accountability with people going to jail, and I thought they would see more of this type of real enforcement with the Dodd-Frank and all of the financial services overhaul and regulation. But I'm not seeing people being, I mean, I just don't see people being walked away in shackles.
And that's the reason that it continues. That's the reason that we have these headlines every year, why there's scandals every year, why there's, you know, huge investigations every year and penalties every year. Because the penalties just don't go far enough.
And even if they do have penalties, they are against the corporation, not against the people that actually did it. And they say, well, you know, okay, we're here. I know you'll love this. We neither admit nor deny the allegations. We will stipulate to persecution that is then indefinitely held off, and we'll pay a fine to, you know, we of course want to pay the cost of this investigation, and we'll pony up the money, and then on we go.
That's right, and it's the investors who are left holding the bag, because they're the ones in the end who really are the only ones who suffer.
We heard
a lot about clawbacks,
right?
You know, there's going to be all these clawbacks on Wall Street if you make these kinds of mistakes and cost companies money. You know, there have been some clawbacks. J.P. Morgan, after the London Whale, there were some clawbacks, and some people lost their jobs. But it never seems to be, the head of divisions or people who are in their job description, they are responsible for running these divisions. And I think that sends a message to Wall Street that this is just the cost of doing business.
These
fines and settlements are the cost of doing business, and the profits made will exceed any penalty and if you're lucky, you won't even get caught at all.
You've nailed it on the head, David. That's exactly it. There's a line item on the incomes, the profit statement for these corporations. It's, you know, legal expenses, fines, whatnot. I mean, they're planning on it. They know it's going to occur. In fact, you know, hearkening back to my very exciting CPA days, you know, there's a specific thing that you have to focus on, and that's how likely are these events to occur in the future, and then they reserve for them.
That's right. And I was just saying, and I know we had talked about this before the show, I wanted to get this in, that right now there's a hearing going on. Janet Yellen, the head of the Federal Reserve, is testifying before the Senate Banking Committee, and I'm not able to watch it, but I'm seeing there's an explosion on Twitter regarding Senator Elizabeth Warren's questioning of Yellen and her dealing with the banks and policy, and the Fed has, of course, been under criticism for that. And this is why a politician like Elizabeth Warren is able to get traction and mentioned as a legitimate contender for higher office, because people are fed up with this stuff. And there are a lot of people who are watching this closely in this country and are just saying, this has got to stop. This has got to stop. The system, they feel like the system is rigged. You know, really, government is our last line of defense against an industry this big. So I'll just leave it.
No, it's well put, David, and I think that we do, you know, on one side, of course, I'm definitely, you know, have a very strong entrepreneurial, capitalistic, you know, self-determining side of me. And the other side, though, I'm like, you know, some of these guys, it reminds me of a movie that maybe not everybody saw out there listening, David, but it was Steven Seagal, Above the Law, and the guy was, you know, dumping toxic waste out in the middle of, you know, Kentucky or somewhere up in the mountains, and you know, he made all this money and paid a few bucks in fines, and the, you know, it's just, there's no, these folks that commit these financial crimes, let's just call it what it is, there's just no day of reckoning, and that's what, you're right, that's what gives traction. And you know, while I might not personally support Elizabeth Warren, I support the idea of holding people accountable for what they do. I mean,
yeah, I like the Steven Seagal movie Under Siege, where he's on the boat, on the Navy boats, and he's the cook, and he's and the terrorists try to take over the boat. And
yeah, I know. There's always.
I'm sorry, I've kind of veered off there.
No, it's okay. They all.
But you mentioned it.
Yeah,
but
I did.
I think your point is well taken. I mean, it's almost there's a Hollywood fantasy to think that these people are going to be held accountable for you know, stealing good. What did Dylan say? Steal a little and they throw you in jail. Steal a lot and they make you a king. And that seems to be a truism that it's never going to change.
Well, I tell you what, we will at least pay attention and do our part to at least raise the issue, David. And I'm glad to have you on, David Widener, ladies and gentlemen. Mr. MarketWatch columnist, the writing on the wall, MarketWatch.com, and we'll have you back, David. I appreciate your time.
I really appreciate it. Thanks. It's always great talking to you.
All right. Have a great day.
Today's edition of Real Money Radio has been brought to you by Holland Financial, conveniently located on Granada Boulevard in Ormond Beach. Could you benefit from a one-on-one confidential conversation with David Holland, or would you like a second opinion to make sure that you're on the right track? Call Holland Financial at 671-PLAN or visit us at planstronger.com to schedule your no-obligation consultation. David looks forward to discussing the financial issues that matter most to you. The host of Real Money Radio, David Holland, is a certified financial planner with over 20 years of experience. And because David provides advice to clients on a daily basis, his hyperactive compliance department wants us to tell you that David Holland is an investment advisor representative of Holland Advisory Services, a registered investment advisory firm. He offers insurance and annuity products through Holland Insurance Services. Commentary given during this radio program should not be considered investment, insurance, tax, or legal advice. Views expressed concerning specific securities are not an offer to buy or sell. Investment advice and planning services can only be given after an analysis of an individual situation and only where Holland Advisory Services is registered or exempt from registering. Real Money Radio is produced by Holland Productions.